Well, whether it's an old injury that we just can't seem to fully recover from or a new twinge that's made an appearance, a lot of us deal with aches and pains. And it can be hard to know what's just an annoyance that will eventually go away on its own and what injuries need medical attention. Well, we're lucky that once a month, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody come by to share their knowledge and experience with us. Bill Boisenault is associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic of the UW Hospital and Clinics. Phil, thanks for being here.
Good morning, Judith. Glad to be back.
And Lori Tyne Brody is a physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. She's also the graduate program director for the Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions in Provo, Utah. Great to see you, Lori.
It is good to be back, and what a great day to be here.
I know. So does hot, humid weather make us more or less prone to activity? I'm thinking if it's me, I just want to lay around, so I'm not too prone to injury. But
well, I think your comment was perfect. I think it's really very individual. There are people who love that hot, humid weather and love to get out and sweat and just eat it up. And then there are others who say, wow, it's just way too hot to do anything. But if you're one of those people who loves to get out there, you know, boy, this is going to be big news to you. Hydrate,
right.
Hydrate. And also keep in mind that your body cannot metabolize fluids as fast as you lose it in weather like this. So even though you feel like you're drinking a lot, you can't keep up with it. And also if you drink too much and you're out in the hot weather for a long period of time, you can become hypotonic, and that is you can deplete yourself of sodium, potassium, things like that, because you're taking in too much water and not enough electrolytes. So in a hot, hot day like this, electrolyte solutions are a good idea.
Oh, okay. So, because a lot of times I think the advice we get is that unless you're really, really, really exerting yourself, probably water is fine, but you're saying that the conditions that you're active in can also affect that.
Exactly. And if you're doing anything, well, the rule of thumb is over 90 minutes. On a day like today, you may shorten that a little bit, especially if it's intense. You know, exercise is an issue of intensity and duration. So if you have a shorter duration, but it's very intense, then you may need more hydration then.
And also, so you're talking about hydration. It doesn't matter, Bill, if you're drinking, you know, if you're active, take some, you know, a huge couple gulps of water, or is it better to have, you know, spread it out and have a little at a time?
Well, I think what Lori already mentioned, it's if you wait to immediately before the activity or during the activity, it's probably too late if you're going to be out there for more than 60 or 90 minutes. I mean, you need to be hydrated before you start the activity, and that's where people can get themselves into trouble. And in terms of acclimation, this really is our first hot, humid day I think we've had. And so unless they've been in
really
other parts of the country.
Really, I think since March.
Yeah, that's right. This is probably the longest spring we've had in years. Yeah. And so if people have choices or options of when they exercise, it's probably better to exercise at the beginning or the end of the day when it's not at the peak heat and humidity.
I remember, especially being in places like Arizona on vacation or something, people would say, now, if you get thirsty, that means you waited way too long. It sounds like it's kind of the same thing, that you should really be filling your body with liquids before you really need it.
Yeah.
If you're feeling thirsty, then you're already behind.
Okay. Well, Larry's out golfing today, and I told him better hydrate, because it's going to be a scorcher. So hopefully he listened or is listening now.
Yes, with water. He's on the golf course.
That's right. There are other options. Many times.
Exactly.
Although hydrate literally is water, hydro. So hopefully he's taking that literally. Well, last time you guys were on, you and Larry talked about some really great and useful advice for getting through long plane trips without having lower back issues. And you talked about using some bags and things like that. What about cars? I think a lot of us get out of town at some point in the summer, and travel can be hard on a body in general, but I bet if you're already dealing with some lower back issues, sitting in a car for hours is not ideal. Bill?
Yeah, I've seen a number of people over the years where sitting is one of the worst things for their back, and then when you add the vibration from the car along with the sitting, you can even add more stress to that low lumbar area. And a couple things in terms of the back pain. Newer cars tend to have a lumbar lordosis support built into the seat, which is great for most people. But having some sort of a pillow or support that provide support for the natural curve of our low back is tends to be a good thing for most people.
Okay.
People that I've seen that have bought cushions or pillows, they've been using them, oftentimes they have the pillow too low. The pillow's down by their tailbone,
mm-hmm.
and that actually promotes posterior pelvic tilt or more slumping.
Oh.
So the support or the thickest part of the support needs to be up around the waist or just above the waist, and that's probably the best spot for most people.
So is it where we kind of feel naturally that there should be a curve there,
yeah,
and
that's
it's
right.
kind of just fitting it into that?
Right. A little bit of sway back is normal,
okay.
Lordosis. And the other thing with sitting, people who have sciatica, pain or numbness tingling down, especially below the knee, driving can really intensify that. And one of the things that can help a little bit is the closer they are to the steering wheel means the closer their feet are to the pedals on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
If they're sitting back and they have to reach for the pedals, the gas or brake pedal, it's like doing a sitting straight leg raise.
Mm-hmm.
And once a nerve gets irritated, it doesn't like to be stretched.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe pulling the seat up a little more closely.
Get as close
than
as you
think.
Can okay. where it's you can still maneuver the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Will keep some of the tension off the sciatic
right.
nerve and can help. But for some people, they sit long enough, it doesn't matter what kind of support they have, mm-hmm. they're going to feel it. And so, you were mentioning earlier a potential 14 to 18 hour car trip. Ideally, every couple hours you find a rest stop or an excuse to stop
mm-hmm.
and get out and walk a little bit, stretch a little bit, can help.
And I'm assuming that if you have crews, that helps too, because at least you can move around a little
yes.
bit as the driver.
Yes. Yep. You can shift your legs around. You can have your knees flexed or bent, which again
mm-hmm.
Takes some of the tension off the sciatic nerve.
What about as a passenger, Laurie? I mean, you have a little more movement
right,
possibilities,
right.
but you're
right,
still stuck
right,
in a
seat. Exactly. I mean, the things that Bill said all still hold true. Try not to stretch that leg out too much if you have a sciatic issue, because it puts a lot of tension on it. And just shifting your body weight, changing your position, changing the inclination of the back of your seat, changing the position of your legs and hips so that you're not in a static position. Body doesn't like to be in a static position
mm-hmm.
for long periods of time. It likes to move. So, the big thing is your vacation starts when you get in the car, not when you get to your destination.
Yeah.
So if you go with that attitude of, I'm not going to race and try to get there in 14 hours, but all right, here we are. We're in the car. We're going to have a nice time. What are we going to see along the way?
Mm-hmm.
Let's stop and plan it that way. So then you're not feeling that pressure to keep pushing.
Right. It also seems, we're talking about legs and lower body and things like that. But also, I know if I drive for a while, I tend to my shoulders come up and I tense up my neck and things like that. Are there any, obviously we don't want to encourage people to be taking their eyes off the road, but are there some good, neck and shoulder stretches that the driver or even the passenger might want to be doing during those little rest stops along the way?
Well, most of that is habit. So if you can train yourself to become aware of that, then you can do something like every time a new song comes on the radio, then you start to check your posture. You do a check and say, is my chin tucked? Is my head tall? Are my shoulders relaxed? Or you have the person in the passenger seat, every 10 minutes, do a beep, okay, posture check, whatever. So it gets to be part of the habit of what you do at a certain time when
mm-hmm.
you're in the car, and then it just becomes routine and becomes habitual, and then you don't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah, and when we're sitting, our upper body posture, head, neck region, it's much of it is driven by your low back and pelvic position. So if you have the lumbar lordotic support, that will help you all the way up through the head, neck area. And then the other thing that can help is having some sort of arm support. At least periodically use it. So whether it's the armrest or the console rest, or you've got a pillow you can fold across your lap and rest your arms on
mm-hmm.
there, that'll take some tension
mm-hmm.
off your shoulders and off your neck.
And if you're doing multi-day driving, are there some good stretches or exercises to do in the evening, maybe before bed, to get you back in alignment?
Yeah, I think if we think sitting in general, we tend to slump a little bit
mm-hmm.
and over time even with the support. And so that's like bending forward. So, lying on the floor on your stomach and doing modified push-ups where your waistline stays on the floor and you push your shoulders up, gently arching your
mm-hmm.
back, standing with the hands in the small of your back and gently arching backward. But ideally in the evening, between the long rides, walking,
mm-hmm.
Get to be physical, swimming, walking. And something other than sitting would be really good for you.
Great. We're talking with Bill Boisnault and Lori Tyne Brody, our physical therapist experts that come by once a month to help us out. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@WPR.org. Cynthia Schuster, our on-air producer, will get those calls and emails to us. And we have Kay in Sauk City on the phone, so let's go there. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I've seen an orthopedic surgeon, and he told me I needed a total ankle replacement, but he doesn't do that because it was a specialized surgery. And I haven't gone any further than that, and I just wondered if you could kind of explain to me what that entails and what the rehab will be.
Bill? The well, joint replacement, you know, most commonly is at the knee and the hip, but basically they're replacing the joint surfaces. So they use different types of artificial material. Typically, it's done with when there's been significant arthritic changes or there's been damage to the joint surfaces. So we no longer have nice smooth surfaces that are gliding on one another, and it can certainly happen at the ankle and can cause all kinds of problems with standing and walking. So basically, think of it in terms of going in. Replacing the joint surfaces is the procedure. Ankle is not as common as the knee and hip, but general recovery is similar, where you're looking at a months of recovery before hopefully you're regaining what close to what's normal function for you.
So I think the best thing to do is to make an appointment to see whomever your physician has referred you to, and they can tell you specifically about their technique and their materials. There's different materials that are used for joint replacements, and there's different approaches and ways of doing it, that are some that are more invasive, some that are less invasive, depending upon your specific situation. So I think Bill has covered the generalities of it, of, you know, we're replacing the joint surfaces. It's a long recovery. Typically, you lose some motion. So what's most important is that you keep your knee healthy, you keep your hip healthy, you try to keep your body weight down, because all those things will help you have a better outcome in the end. And those are things that you can do now while you talk with the surgeon about what's specifically involved in your case.
Yeah, and generally, ideally, people try rehabilitation first, conservative care first, mm-hmm. With the foot and ankle, besides exercises and balance work, but also some either orthotics or ankle support, and see if that allows you to be functioning. It gives you the quality of life that you're hoping for. And then when those things don't work or they fail, that's when the total joint replacement can be a good option.
So, Kay, have they tried other things before suggesting the replacement?
Well, I had a knee replaced 6 months ago, and because the knee was bad, the ankle matched it. Well, now I got a good knee, and the ankle is not happy anymore.
Oh, dear.
And so it's clear that, I mean, it's just painful to do anything, and the range of motion is quite limited in the ankle. And the more I limit the range, the less pain I have. So like right. Walking up an incline where I have to lift my foot up. Stairs are a difficulty, like going downstairs, because I can't point my toe
okay.
to approach the next step. So I think I've passed all the, you okay. know, let's kind of hobble together for a while.
Have you tried a heel lift in that shoe?
Yes.
Okay. And do you have good motion in your knee replacement knee?
I don't have as much flexion as I might. I had more flexion maybe 2 months after the surgery than I have now, and I think it's because my ankle is worse, like I can't ride the bike anymore.
Okay. Well, then if it's starting to affect your knee, then you need to move on and do something about it, or it's going to affect the quality of movement in that entire limb. So, So I'd get more information at this point and move on.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks, Kay. Good luck. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. We are talking about aches, pains, strains, and sprains, how to avoid them, and how to recover from them when they happen. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisnault are physical therapists on call. And Diane in Kiel has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I have a question. A couple of weeks ago, I was out hanging laundry on our back porch, and our little guy started running off, and so I jumped to run after him, you know, stepped down on that first step, and I think I pulled, like, a calf muscle. If I didn't need to run after my little guy, I probably would have been on the ground. It ended up with a lot of bruising and swelling and stuff, and I'm wondering, I think to myself, okay, well, that's a sign I need to drop a couple of pounds, but I'm wondering, is there anything else I should do to help prevent that from happening again?
Right. Where's the bruising and swelling?
Well, I ended up wrapping the calf because I saw that on the internet and icing it. And so the bruising and swelling happened below where the wrap was. The tenderness was on, like, the inside part of my calf below the knee. But the bruising then was below where I had wrapped at.
So it kind of in the back of your calf where you have that sort of meaty muscle in that area?
Yes.
Okay. And how's it feeling now?
Well, it's still tender, and you know, in the mornings and such, but it's so much better. I can walk on it now. And
okay, all right.
Before, I could only walk with my heel on the ground, not letting my toes come down.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, it sounds like you tore a muscle, that it wasn't just a pull, because if you have bleeding and visible bruising in the area, then you had a pretty significant tear. So it's good that it's getting better, and I would sort of continue to try to strengthen it. That is doing things like toe raises, some gentle stretching. Can you go up and down on your toes now?
I can, yes.
Okay. Can you do it on a single leg or just two?
Two. Not a single yet.
Okay. Kind of keep working towards that where you gradually shift more and more of the weight towards your involved leg. And continue trying to stretch, doing a standard stretch calf stretch against the wall with your knee straight and with your knee bent or over the edge of a step. If you can do it gently, you don't want to push it really hard because it's probably trying to heal.
Right.
And make sure that you can walk normally and you can push off. And as long as you're continuing to make forward progress and get back to where it feels normal to you, where you can do a single toe raise on one side just like the other side, you're probably in good shape. If you hit a plateau and you can't keep moving forward, then you should go in and have it looked at.
Okay.
Okay. But as long as you're making, you know, steady progress and you're getting to the point where it feels and looks the same as the other one, then you're probably in good shape.
Fantastic.
And in terms of avoiding it, don't jump off the deck.
Yeah. Keep that little guy closer.
That's right.
Exactly.
Thanks for that call, Diane. I actually wonder how many injuries are caused by running after kids and pets.
Then you have no choice.
Right,
you know,
right.
You go drop everything and you take whatever it goes along with
it.
But, yeah, it's an occupational hazard being a parent.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And a lot of times it isn't chasing after the pet. It's the pet running into you or the pet
or
pulling
tripping
on the leash
up. Yep.
Or tripping you. Yep. Yes, those are just those unavoidable things.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that, Diane. And Megan in Madison is next. Hi, Megan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm driving, actually, so I'll take my comment off the air.
Okay.
But I was just wondering if you could talk about runner's knee. I get runner's knee horrible. It hurts to go downstairs. But I want to continue running, so I was wondering if you have any helpful tips for that.
And that's pain in your kneecap, in the front of your knee, when you go down the stairs? Okay.
Yep.
All right. Patellofemoral pain. It's quite a common condition in people who do running sports, long distance runners. The most current research is suggesting the hip as a big source of contribution to this problem and the source of its treatment as well. And that is people tend to have weakness in their deep hip rotator muscles. So what happens is as their hip muscles fatigue and weaken, the knees tend to turn in somewhat and it creates this increased angulation of the kneecap and it puts a tremendous amount of stress on the undersurface of the kneecap. So when we see people, and predominantly women, because we have wider hips than men, so it's more likely that our knees are going to go in sort of that knock-kneed position, and even just a little bit is enough to throw off the mechanics of the kneecap. We work very hard on strengthening the hip muscles and retraining their gait so that their hip, knee, and foot stay in alignment. So we do some focus strengthening of the quadriceps, which is important, but we found that we get a better return on strengthening at the hip.
So it sounds like this is something Megan probably wants to get some help with.
Yeah, if she goes in and sees a physical therapist, particularly a sports physical therapist who specializes in runners and knee pain and so on, and there's some of those in Madison, a session or two to get instructed in the appropriate strengthening exercises, as well as to evaluate her gait and have her correct her gait so that she understands mentally what the right position is for her knees, that can help prevent a multitude of problems down the road.
Yeah, when it reaches a point where it's bothering you going down the stairs, which is a pretty common sequelae with the running pain, and if that lasts for more than a couple of weeks, it's not getting better, then it impacts how you stand, how you walk, and you start compensating. And so if Megan goes in, she should bring her running shoes with her. That can help the therapist as part of the examination. And they should look at her from her feet on up through her hips and trunk, try to figure out why this is developing. So that will lead to recovery and hopefully prevention from it coming back again.
Great. Thanks for that call. And let's go to Wayne in Waukesha next. Hi, Wayne.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just... I'm actually at work, and I wasn't listening to the program, but my wife called me and said that you people were talking about total ankle replacements and had some questions, and I have a total ankle replacement.
Oh, great. Yeah, there was a woman who called earlier who needs one, and she wanted to know some of the experience about the surgery and recovery. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. Number one, I went to Dr. Richard Marks at Frederick Hospital at the Medical College in Milwaukee. And he and his staff were absolutely incredible. I was fighting this ankle for a while and didn't know exactly what was going on. And literally when I walked in the door, he immediately started doing things that took away the pain. I was walking on crutches. It was so bad. And a side note, I had to fight with the insurance company for about 3 months before they finally, actually, they didn't even give in. I had to go to an outside, whatever they're called.
Arbitrator?
Arbitrator mm-hmm. to rule in my favor, and then I went in for the surgery. The surgery, in my case, took about 6 or 7 hours, if I remember correctly. They had to rebuild the heel of my foot. They scraped it out and fused it. And then after they did that, they flipped me over and cut open the front of my leg, about maybe 4 inches above and below the ankle, right down the middle of the front of the leg, and opened it up and did the ankle replacement. When I came to in the recovery room, I immediately knew that something had changed dramatically with my ankle. I understand that I was on drugs and so forth. I could really tell.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
And after I was in the hospital about 3 days, and when I went home, I had to be home for 11 days with my toes above my nose and then come back and get a cast put on. And after about 6 or 7 days, something like that, I called up and asked if I could stop taking the pain medication because I literally had no pain. And within 14 weeks, well, first of all, they put a cast on. I was in the cast, I believe, 6 or 8 weeks, and then I went into a walking boot for maybe 6 weeks or something like that. And within 14 weeks from the day of the operation, I was walking in tennis shoes with no limp.
Wow.
And
all right.
From the time I stopped taking pain medication after, like I said, about the 6 days or whatever it was, the only thing I've ever taken for it is some Tylenol here and there. The ankle itself is fantastic. It's unbelievable.
So, Wayne, are you under any restrictions or precautions at this stage?
No. My doctor suggested that I probably just don't start taking up jogging.
Yeah.
But I ride a bicycle. Mm-hmm. I go to work every day. I walk up and down steps. The only thing that's difficult, and I can do it if I have to, but I avoid it. I pass it on to my wife, is walking on an uneven lawn.
Yeah.
Because my ankle only bends up and down. It doesn't bend sideways.
Right.
So that
fusion.
Rocking. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thanks for sharing.
I'm telling you, I went from being on crutches to no limp, no pain whatsoever. And it's been 4 years now, I believe, and I'm in a 5-year study checking this out. So
great. Well, Wayne, thanks so much for sharing that experience.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Wayne. Very nice.
Because, Bill and Lori, you said that their ankle is a lot less common, a replacement.
Right. So it's, and I think Wayne pointed out that it's important to pick your surgeon well. You want to pick somebody who's done this a few times,
right?
Not someone who's, you know, trying it out or so you want someone with some experience. It makes a big difference.
Oh, great. Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
And his difficulty with uneven surface goes on what Lori mentioned before, is that, you know, generally after surgery your range of motion is less painful, hopefully not painful, but typically it's not normal. And you don't have the normal joint mechanics. I mean, that's the trade-off. And so you compensate, you adapt, and hopefully you can do most things that you like to do.
So when Wayne was saying that it's difficult to walk over an uneven turf, is it because the ankle can't do a side-to-side rocking motion?
It
only goes front, up and down,
right,
front and back.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, again, Wayne, thanks so much for sharing that. That's really useful information. Jay in Eau Claire has a question. Hi, Jay.
Hi. Yes, I've had both my hips replaced, but it's my knee replacement. It's been a year and a half now. It's just extremely stiff. Just wondering what stretching exercises or what therapy I can do to get that knee back.
So has it ever gone straight since your surgery?
No, not really. And I know a lot of that was that I didn't do my initial physical therapy very good, but what I can do.
Yeah, it's at a year and a half out, it's really tough to make any changes. How far is it from straight?
Oh, I don't know, maybe 3 degrees.
Okay, so it's not a huge difference, but it's probably noticeable when you walk.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, the options that are available to you at this point in time, probably the most common would be something like a DynaSplint. Have they talked about that?
No.
Okay, that's a splint that you wear that actually holds your knee in full extension. You wear it, you know, you could wear it at night because you're supposed to wear it for several hours at a time. And hopefully you could end up remodeling your tissue. Now, the problem is it gets really stiff after it's been on for a while.
Sure.
So if your knee is already stiff, sometimes it doesn't feel so great. You know, the other option is to pull a little bit of traction on it. So do you belong to a gym at all?
No.
Okay. Well, for some people who have pulleys or weights, or you can even use your body weight for this, if you can take a belt or something and figure eight it around your ankle, hook it on the other side of a door and slide yourself back so that you have some pulling on the length of your leg, and then set some weight on top of your knee. That'd be the other way to do it. So you want to pull a little bit of traction and then put the weight on it. And I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be safe for the hip replacement, as long as you're leaning back a little bit. So you're not sitting up and forward flexing. So that's probably your best option at home.
Okay, I think I can rig something up that'll work.
You sound like that kind of a guy.
Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
There was four of us up fishing, and we're all in our 60s. We all got Charley horses within 3 days of being there. Is there anything that it could have been that we ate, or just a major coincidence?
So Charley horses in the hip or the back?
No, in our leg, in our legs.
In our legs.
In our calf muscles.
Well, it could be a change in partly in your diet. If you're not getting enough, if you're not drinking enough, if you're out on a boat all day and you're not having your usual fluid intake, could also be a little bit of, I don't know, Bill, stenosis. If you're sitting in a boat all day for a long period of time, if you're staying in a stationary position.
So are you standing or sitting most of the time?
We're sitting in the boat all day long.
You are.
Of course, the flexion would be.
Right.
Flexion wouldn't be a problem.
Would be good,
then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's most likely fluid would be the biggest thing. It'd be the number one on the differential.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jay. And we are talking with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our physical therapists that come by once a month to answer your questions. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org, or you can leave a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mealer Show, and Mealer is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mealer. And let's go next to Judy in Madison. Hi, Judy.
Hi, I have a question about rotator cuff surgery. This is not for myself, it's for my husband. I'll give you a little background. The surgeon called it the Brett Favre surgery. Okay, that's what he wants to do. And my husband is 76 years old. Now, I'm wondering, and he's in good physical shape and everything, and he's not overweight, and he doesn't have any physical problems. But we were both wondering if it's really necessary at this point. He can do things basically, he can't lift his arm any farther than straight out. He can't go up, okay? Mm-hmm. And he thought that, he can do everything else, like mow the lawn, do anything that is below that height. And it doesn't hurt, but when he goes up, then it hurts. And so we were wondering, he's not working anymore. He's retired. He's not a carpenter where he has to lift lift his arm to do things. I guess basically we were wondering how the physical therapy will turn out in the long run.
Well, let's back up. Why is he having surgery if he can kind of do everything he wants to do? Is it because he's having a lot of pain or...
Yes, that's what I asked him. I said, if you can, do the things that you normally do, but see, when he reaches up, I'm handicapped, so he has to reach up into the cupboard to get a bowl down or something, and I said, why not just use the other arm?
Always the practical one.
Yeah. So, that's the point. I said, I don't know if the surgery really is necessary. Mm-hmm.
What are they talking about from the surgeon's perspective of the recovery? What are they telling him?
Well, they're telling him that that it will be like long term, he will not be normal for a year.
Oh, wow.
And so this is what I'm wondering.
Okay, let me ask this. Did he have an acute injury recently where he fell and traumatized his shoulder, or this is something that's been going on and progressive?
This is another thing I was telling him. He was a mailman. He always carried his satchel on that side, for one thing. So I think that kind of weakened it. Then he fell on the ice and fell right on that shoulder.
And how long ago was that, may I ask?
That was a couple of years ago, and he did go in for physical therapy and everything.
Let's see what Lori and Bill think about this.
So what I hear is that it's not a recent injury. It's not a fall with an acute rotator cuff tear that they can go in and repair. At age 76, what he probably has is a degenerative tear that was progressive, and maybe when he fell on the ice a couple of years ago, it finished it off. This is not going to be a repairable rotator cuff at age 76, given his history. So probably the best thing to do is perhaps get another opinion on it, because a rotator cuff repair doesn't seem to make sense now. If his main problem is pain, there are a couple of other procedures that they can do that have a much faster recovery and can deal with the pain. We're looking at a much shorter recovery. But if they're, I'm trying to understand what the surgeon wants to do, but if he wants to go in and do a repair where he's going to be immobilized for periods of time and so on, that doesn't seem to make sense given the history that you've given me.
Well, if I remember him right, he said that there were 5 tears.
Okay.
And that it would be the Brett Favre surgery, whatever they did to Brett Favre, that's what he would do to him.
Yeah. Well, your husband doesn't sound like a football quarterback. So I'm not sure that that's
not yet
the right procedure for him. So given the number of questions you have, it seems to make sense to get another opinion and see if someone else concurs with that or if they have something else to offer you, and then you can decide.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Judy. And we will go to another Judy, but this one in Shawano. Hi, Judy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have experienced arthritis in my knee joint on the right-hand side, and then I think due to compensation. I have a pain that reoccurs in my left hip. But my question is, I'm thinking of buying a new car. My original thought was to buy a small car, one of the new fuel economy type, which to me would have me sitting with my legs more straight out in front of me. Now I'm thinking that maybe I should be looking at cars that have a higher seat. And I wondered what Lori and Bill thought.
Great. Thanks for that call, Judy. And certainly good that Judy's thinking about this in advance.
It is. This is the time to think about. And those are really good questions. And, you know, I think the best thing for you to do is just to go to a car dealership and just try. You know, some of the newer cars, you can adjust the seats up and down and forward and back, which gives you a lot more flexibility. But other cars don't quite have those features either. But that all that is important to consider is the height of the car and the height of the seat. But really, it's like going in and trying on a pair of shoes. I think ultimately you'll find a car that fits you best, or at least you can adjust the seat so you can get both in and out comfortably.
All right, it's not the getting in and out, although in some cars it takes me a longer time to get in position once I'm out. But what I'm wondering is, you know, if I'm going to be driving in it for 3 or 4 hours, is one type of car or the better?
Well, again, it comes down to the seat that fits you the best, and usually the more you can adjust the seat, the better, because then you can set it up to fit you, you know, your height, the length of your legs. So the more you can adjust, the better. If you have no trouble getting in and out of the car, then you don't have to worry so much about the height of the car. But, you know, looking ahead, you've had a knee replacement, your hip is bothering you, you know, looking ahead, you want to get a car that's the right height, best height for you, so you can get in and out easily.
And typically, a low car is going to be harder to get in and out of.
Right.
So, and I mean, it's kind of like a mattress, except it's a lot easier to try out different cars. You can drive in them and you can adjust the seat. And as Bill said, the more adjustments you can make, the better. Mm-hmm. And then you know it's going to fit you no matter how things change.
Exactly.
Over the
I was going to say that, because your needs might actually change.
Yep.
Great. Well, thanks for that call, Judy. And Jeff in Eau Claire emailed, "I've been struggling with tendonitis in my Achilles tendon for the past few months. I rest as much as I can and do ice it occasionally, but as soon as I do any activity, it starts to hurt again. I'm unable to stretch much because it causes more pain. What's the best treatment for my condition?"
Okay, the Achilles tendinopathy question. We are big advocates for the eccentric exercise program for tendinopathy. A little bit of stretching is okay, but overstretching can actually be more aggravating. Rest alone will not do it, because precisely as he said, it comes right back again. So what we advocate is standing over the edge of a step. You do a toe raise up on both feet, and then you lift up the uninvolved leg and a lower with just your injured one. And you do
that. So you're dropping your heel down.
You're dropping your heel down with the involved one. And you do that, you know, for sets of 20 or 30 repetitions as many times a day as you can. And when that starts to get easy and it doesn't hurt anymore, then you add weight in a backpack.
It will hurt in the beginning. It'll be uncomfortable in the beginning. Yes. This is one situation where no pain, no gain really had a fit.
Right, exactly. At least I have revised my thinking about this, where I used to say it shouldn't hurt, but there's a large body of research now that shows that for these chronic tendinopathies, it has to hurt. And that's because these tendinopathies develop their own blood supply that's not supposed to be there. And with that blood supply travels a nerve supply, and that nerve supply causes the pain. And so essentially what you're doing is you're obliterating that neurovascular supply with these heavy loading eccentrics.
And how long should someone hold both the stretch going up on the toes and then the stretch going down where you're dropping your heel below the edge of the stair?
It's not a stretch.
Right.
It's a strengthening exercise. Okay. So you go up, lift up your foot, go down, lift up, lower, go down. So it's not a stretch. This is a strengthening exercise.
Great.
Yeah, the old routines, it was lots of stretching.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a completely different animal.
Wow. Okay, thanks for clarifying that. We are talking with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapists who can answer your questions when you call 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Talking about aches, pains, strains, and sprains with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. And we have several people waiting to talk with you guys, so let's go back to the phone. And Jim in DeForest. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
What's your question?
I've got, I guess, what you'd call a worn-out shoulder. I'm 73 years old. I'm a farmer my whole life. I've had lots of medical issues, and... actually have a bad heart valve, so I'm a little bit afraid to have surgery. That's bone on bone. I got bone spurs. I'm wondering what's going to happen if I just keep leaving it go and keep using it as much as I can. I can't use it too much.
Jim, is it your dominant arm?
Is it your dominant arm, Jim?
No, it's my left arm, actually.
Oh, that's pretty good. Is it giving you a lot of pain?
Yes. I have to. All I can really take is a leave.
Okay.
Because of my heart condition and other issues.
Okay. Well, you know, there's not going to be a whole lot that anyone can do at this point outside of surgery. You know, there's not much that physical therapy can do. You know, we would suggest that you keep moving it and using it as much as you can because it will feel worse if it just gets stiff. So using it and keeping it loose to the best of your ability is a good strategy. Typically, if you're bone on bone, they talk about a total shoulder replacement. And, you know, you and your doctor would have to sort out whether or not it's worth the risk of that surgery. And some of that depends, comes down to how much pain you have and how much it's affecting your quality of life and how much medication you have to take to keep the pain at a level that allows you to enjoy the things you want to do.
Yeah, well, I've had two evaluations. For the first 10 years, they couldn't, I say 10 years from my heart surgery, they couldn't do a surgery because of the risk. But now, the last year, actually the last year and a half, university doctor, I think it was Ablov, said he could do it in half an hour.
Oh.
Jim, have you...
And the cardiologist said it would be all right, but I'm a little bit afraid to try it because I'm allergic to anesthesia and I've had so many issues. I just do not take surgery well.
Jim, I agree with Lori that physical therapy is not going to fix that shoulders, but have you seen a physical therapist in the last year or so?
Not in the last year, but I've seen him over the last 10 years.
Okay. You know, again, if you came in to see me, I would try to give you some exercise to maintain what you have at that shoulder, but I would show you ways to stretch your mid back and upper back. You know, to reach up overhead, we get a lot of motion through our shoulder, but we also get motion through our trunk. If you have stiffness in your mid and upper back, then that puts more pressure on your shoulder. And, you know, sometimes you can squeeze another 10 or 15 degrees of motion in a shoulder through the trunk or spine. And so, you know, if you assume you've done everything you can with that shoulder, you know, I don't know, it may help a little bit with some of the things you have to do around your house and your farm.
Well, it seems the more I use it, I can't sleep at all at night, then more it hurts, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty typical for these kinds of arthritic changes.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Jim. I hope it works out for you. Nancy and Hazelhurst is next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I've been seeing a chiropractor for a couple of years because I had low back, a small scoliosis in the lumbar, and it was affecting my right back side and my right hip. And between chiropractic work and good exercising, I've been able to help the lower back, but now the hip is not responding, and it appears that it might be bursitis in the hip joint, and I'm wondering, is rest the only thing that does this? It does not hurt when I'm walking. It does not hurt when I bike, but it hurts when I sit.
Bill, what do you think?
Well, that's unusual for bursitis at the hip. The bursa at the hip gets stressed when we're standing and walking. Pain in the hip can come from lots of places, including the hip, but it can also be referred from the pelvis and even up into the mid and upper lumbar spine. So it doesn't sound like a classic bursitis to me.
And what are the bursa and what do they do?
Bursa are like little sacs that we find around bony prominences, and there's fluid within these sacs, and it just helps reduce the friction where muscles and tendons, you know, cross over a bony bump or a bony surface. And so they provide some source of lubrication between the tendon and muscle and the bone. And they can become inflamed and cause a lot of pain. But again, you know, Nancy, the bursts at the hip, they tend to get aggravated with standing and walking because that's when there's the most stress on them.
So do you think something else is going on with the sitting?
Well, yes, most likely. And so either mid or upper lumbar spine, upper mid-back, if that hasn't been evaluated or checked, would be something to look at.
Okay. I have another point here than that. About 10 years ago, I was in a nasty car accident, and my right ankle was severely damaged, and I'm wondering if I'm seeing some repercussions from that 10 years down the road.
Yeah, it's possible, or all the way up into your spine, if it's altered how you stand and walk. And, you know, again, we don't use our ankles when we're sitting. And so if sitting really is consistently the worst thing, I mean, I'd be looking at something with the pelvis and the trunk in terms of where these symptoms are most likely coming from.
Could it more be arthritis versus?
Yeah, it's possible, but... Yes, it is possible, but then again, I would think at some point with X amount of walking and standing, you would have the same pain. So I've had people with hip arthritis and sitting, you know, sitting does make them worse, but then typically also the standing and walking.
Okay, so if I'm not having any issues with pain while I'm exercising, is there any reason to avoid exercise?
No, as long as you're not having any extra pain within an hour or two after the activity, or you're not extra sore the next morning when you wake up, I'm not hearing anything that says you shouldn't do those things.
Great. Thanks for that call, Nancy. And we had an email from Sue. She says, my daughter is interested in physical therapy as a career. Due to circumstances, however, it would be very difficult for her to complete the many years of education to get the doctorate degree now required for physical therapists. A physical therapy assistant degree would be very attainable for her. What do you think about that, Bill and Lori?
Well, I think a physical therapy assistant degree is a great way to go. We have physical therapist assistants who work as part of our team at UW, and they're invaluable employees and members of the patient care team. So it's a great way to get into the field. You can do it in a couple of years, and depending upon the state you live in, there's quite a range of things that you can do. Then also down the road, as she becomes more established, she may decide she wants to go back to physical therapy school, and at some point down the road, then that might be attainable for her, but this is a great way to start.
Yeah, Wisconsin Hospital Association every fall puts out projections mm-hmm. of shortages, workforce shortages with different disciplines, and the physical therapist and physical therapist assistants is projected to be significant shortages looking ahead to the next 10, 20 years. I think there are a number of PTA programs around the state, and similar to the PT programs, the job market can vary. If you live in an area where there's sure. a school, which is most convenient, then sometimes it's harder to find a job there. But after you graduate, if you have some flexibility in terms of driving or moving, mm-hmm. you'll find positions.
And so the physical therapist assistants work under a physical therapist. Is that kind of the structure?
Right. They work together. The physical therapist does the evaluation and kind of guides the treatment program. And so they kind of work as a team.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, it sounds like an encouraging field and like there are some good job opportunities too, which is always nice to look forward to as you're starting something new. Let's go next to Nancy in Waukesha. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I'm calling with another knee question. I'm 55 years old. My job is a desk job, so I'm sitting literally for nearly 8 hours a day. And to compensate for all the sitting I do exercise. I make sure to walk on a treadmill in the morning. I walk at a very healthy 4 miles per hour at a slight incline on the treadmill. And after work, I do work out at a health club. And I think because of my age and because of my amount of exercising that I do, I have sustained some injuries in the knee area. I had been experiencing a great deal of pain from the beginning of the year, and finally the knee just buckled on me, and I got in to see a doctor of physical medicine and rehab. And I had seen this specialist a year ago for knee problems, and it's the same knee. And as we were talking, and I was able to demonstrate, well, if I move my knee just like this, and I was basically drawing circles with my knee, keeping my toe on the ground, I did experience sharp pain in the doctor's office. And he kind of smiled, and he says that what I was describing and what I had demonstrated was pretty much classic middle-aged torn cartilage in the knee. And I explained, well, I was doing some exercises that I had learned in a physical therapy some time ago. I would get down on all fours and I would extend the problem leg, my right leg, I would extend it back. And as I would draw the knee back into the starting position, that's when I would feel pain that was, in my opinion, unrelated to the torn cartilage pain.
Okay.
And it's this other pain that seems to still remain.
Well, let's see what Bill and Lori think. Lori?
Where is that pain that's unrelated to the meniscus pain?
It's in the fleshy area, top of the calf, bend of the knee. So it's behind the leg, but it's at the very top of the muscle.
Well, that's pretty classic torn cartilage pain. So typically you feel it in the back of the knee, and because your knee joint is unloaded, and when you contract your hamstring muscles, there's an attachment from one of your hamstring muscles to the meniscus in the back of your knee, and it can pull on it. And so if you do have a torn meniscus, particularly in the back of the knee, that kind of exercise can reproduce those symptoms. So it is possible that you're both talking about the same kind of pain, but it manifests differently with different activities.
Oh, okay.
So what did he suggest you do about it?
Well, he assured me that the injury would mend.
Okay.
But that it would take quite a long time, and he defined quite a long time as about 6 weeks. And during this time, he prescribed prescription strength non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, which I was taking, and I took it daily for about 4 weeks. And
okay, I'm going to have to ask you to hold that there, Nancy. We'll definitely get more from Bill and Lori after the news as a follow-up to that. But I want to let people know that they're listening to The Larry Mueller Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will be back right after this look at the news. It's great to exercise and be active, but no matter what our age, there are precautions we need to take. Without attention to safety, a wrong turn or overuse of joints and muscles can lead to aches and pains or even worse. But with the right care at the right time, an injury doesn't need to hinder you permanently. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking today about how to keep our bodies free of aches and pains that can slow us down. Our guests are physical therapists Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault. They're here for the next half hour to answer your questions. Do you have a recurring injury that you just can't seem to get past? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And be sure to visit our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. If you like the page, you'll get daily updates on upcoming show topics. There's a lot more to talk about with Bill and Lori, so I hope you'll stay tuned. We'll be back right after the news. Great to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, and visiting with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne-Brody, our physical therapists. Just to let you know, Larry will be back tomorrow, and at 11, he'll be talking with Don Stanley about social media for professional networking purposes. And then at 11:45, Dr. Lowell Lakritz will share advice for good dental health. But right now, we're talking about keeping backs and spines and knees and ankles and all kinds of things healthy. Bill Boisenault, thanks so much for being back with us.
Pleasure as always.
And Lori Tyne-Brody, thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
And we have some folks that have been waiting to talk with you. So let's go. Nancy in Waukesha, we want to finish up with the calf pain recovering from torn cartilage.
Right, right. So, you know, Nancy, if in the absence of things like swelling in your knee and clicking, catching, locking, you should recover from this. Sometimes it's better to leave the cartilage, even if it's torn, in place, as long as it's not causing what we call mechanical symptoms like catching, locking, swelling, etc. I think you did say at one point, though, that your leg gave way.
Yeah, it buckled as I was climbing some stairs.
It
buckled, and it was because of pain.
Right.
But what you're describing, I would have to say, is not occurring. I'm not feeling catching. Go ahead.
So I'd say at this point, you know, I would get in to see a physical therapist and have them evaluate your knee, have them evaluate your gait, have them set you up on an exercise program that can focus on improving your strength and balance, etc., and just kind of have you monitored to see how you recover from this and see if you can get back to a place where you're safe. If your knee is buckling and giving way, then you're at risk of a fall and a different kind of injury. Mm-hmm. So you need to keep an eye on that. But you should get into PT and have it looked at and get on a program to monitor.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Nancy. And good luck with that.
Thanks for hanging on.
And Bill from Minocqua emailed to say that he talked to Lori on this program last June or July, and Lori suggested heavy load training. It took him about 6 months to become pain-free. He's 73 years old and a runner and has been back running 3 days a week since the beginning of the year, along with some 5 and 10K runs. So thanks for your help.
Oh, well, that's great that somebody, we often ask people to call back and tell us how they're doing, right. but the heavy load training does work.
I mean, that's part of the method. It takes some time, and people need to stick with it over
Exactly. And depending upon how long it's been going on, so he said he's 73 years old, so you can get back to it. And probably the older you are, the longer it takes. But, you know, I'd say at a minimum, you know, 2 months, mm-hmm. Depending upon how long you've had the tendinopathy, up to 6 months. So, and you know, for him, it may not have been just an issue of resolving the tendinopathy, but also getting back to the running, which is a pretty high demand activity.
Great. But thanks so much for that feedback, Bob, because like Bill and Lori said, sometimes the advice goes out into the ether and we're not sure what happened. So that's great to hear. Let's go back to the phones and Shelley in Rice Lake. Hi, Shelley.
Hi. I have a question about knee replacement. I was told that by the time I was 50, I would probably need a knee replacement, but I only actually need a kneecap. So I'm wondering if there's a good kneecap replacement only.
Have you been in to see the orthopedic surgeon?
Yes.
Okay, and what is the surgeon telling you?
He said that they did a lot of the kneecap replacements, but found out that they didn't work like they had hoped. He was not comfortable doing just the kneecap.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. Typically, okay. When you do a knee replacement, you do the whole thing. And it's rare that you do just a kneecap, you know, maybe in isolated cases in a young person who has a, you know, shattered kneecap from some kind of accident or something. But typically, they're not done as part of a degenerative process. Mm-hmm. But there are a number of things that physical therapy can do to help with the kneecap part of your pain. Have you been to physical therapy?
Yes.
I'm kind of presuming so, since that you were told that you needed knee replacements. So
yeah,
I
have had the orthoscopic surgery.
Okay.
Where they went in and smoothed out on both knees.
Okay. All right. And are you on an ongoing exercise program now?
Most of the time.
Okay. Have you tried exercising in a pool?
I have, and I have some arthritis problems in my hip. So.
Okay. Yeah, that would be a good place for you to work, because you can do some good strengthening without a lot of weight bearing on that joint, and also be good for your hips. You know, in the summer, it's a nice place to exercise. So, you know, doing the same thing year-round isn't necessarily the best idea. So if you can do some things in the summer and then some different things in the winter and introduce that variability, it might keep it fresh for you and keep you involved in an ongoing program.
All right.
Great.
Yeah, good luck with that, Shelley.
Thanks
for that call, Shelley. And let's go next to John in Janesville. Hi, John.
Hi. Bill and Lori, I have esophageal cancer, but I haven't experienced any pain or discomfort. But I do have a problem with my left hip. And I've been thinking, I haven't talked to a physician, but I've been thinking about seeking relief for it by maybe surgery. But I wonder if I do that, if the recovery and physical therapy afterwards might be a little bit too much for me with my existing cancer problem.
Well, a couple of things, John. Have you seen anybody for this left hip problem, your physician?
No, not at the moment I haven't. I'm still on the fence.
Okay. How long has it been there?
It started about 7 or 8 months ago, and I can live with it, but it affects the way I walk, and I've got a four-wheel walker at the present time for any distance. But I do take 2 tablets of Aleve each day, which works remarkably well.
Okay. And when do you go? When's your next follow-up for your cancer checkup?
Well, the carbone cancers said when I start experiencing problems, and to date, miraculously, I haven't.
Yeah, okay. Good for you. Good for you. Well, I would give your physician a call and tell him about this left hip pain, how long it's been there, and you know if it's getting worse, how is it interfering with your day? You know, it may or may not be related to the cancer or treatment you've had for it, but that's where I would start. And then they can help guide you in terms of what might be the best route for treatment. But if it's been around for 7 or 8 months, that tells you it's probably not going to go away on its own. Time is not going to be enough. And so I think checking in with your docs and just describing what you're having would be a good thing to do.
Bill, is the therapy quite extensive for replacement hips?
Well, the recovery time, it takes some time. But like you said, there's lots of factors that can impact the rehabilitation process and how long it takes. I guess what I would do right now, you need to figure out is the pain due to arthritis where a total joint replacement might be helpful, or is it due to something else? And so that's where you need to start first.
Well, thank you very much for your help.
Sure, and best of luck, John. Let's go next to Jeff in Milwaukee. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. I've been experiencing some pain in actually both of my wrists, but predominantly my left. And if I take my thumb and put it at the, there's a little pocket between the, where the thumb and the wrist meet and the ball of the wrist, that's where I get most of the pain. And I've been taking a leave for it here and there. And at the beginning it worked, and now it doesn't seem to be doing anything for this. So I guess I was curious. Is this something I should see my doctor for or get therapy for?
Sure. I think Lori has an idea for you.
we're all sitting here looking at our thumbs in the studio just for the visual listeners. So this is at the base of your thumb, right where it joins the wrist?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's the most common site of arthritis in your thumb at the carpal metacarpal joint. So if you're having a lot of pain there, there are a number of things you can do in therapy. There are, splints, resting night splints. There's some exercises to stay mobile and loose and things like that. Maybe some modifications of your gripping, perhaps a kind of a grip or a glove to wear while you're fishing or golfing that can help with that pain. So, okay. You might start off with a trip to your doctor who could then refer you on to a hand therapist.
Okay.
Who can go over some of the options for you. But it most likely, that's the most likely culprit right there, especially when you have those implements that are resting right against that joint. In addition to the gripping that the thumb is having to do, you're kind of putting a double load on it there.
Great. And I do work in the trade, so I'm constantly using my hands.
Oh, well, then I would say it's even more important to get in and be seen, because then it becomes a vocation issue and not just an avocation issue.
Okay.
We would want to have you go without golf and fishing, but it's probably more important not to go without work.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. And let's see. We have an email here from Jean. What recommendations would you offer for physical therapy following lumbar epidural injections? And why don't you tell us what those are for, too?
Yeah, epidural injections are steroid injections, and they're designed to relieve leg symptoms. So kind of classic sciatica. There may be some numbness, tingling that goes along with it. And the goal of the injections is to calm things down enough where people can really participate in a rehabilitation program. People have acute enough leg pain where they don't tolerate exercises or manual therapy. So it's really designed to open the door where either one, the therapist can do a more extensive examination or really implement a rehab program. It's a little different from physician to physician, but generally the docs I work with, they have patients wait anywhere from 3 to 7 days before they come back to physical therapy. But, as soon as they get the significant significant pain relief they hope they get. That's when I'd like to see people. So there's not a specific exercise program related to the epidural. The epidural is to decrease the acuteness and decrease pain, so then a complete exam can be done and a rehab program can be developed.
Great. And you can join in with your questions for Bill Boisenault and Lori Time Brody by calling 1-800-642-1234. Again, 800-642-1234. We do have some open lines. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Anthony in Green Bay. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I have neuropathy in my lower body, both legs. And because of that, I walked with a cane. And now I acquired ulnar neuropathy in my left arm. I'm on heavy medications for painkiller medications. And I'm trying to figure out some ways through physical therapy to get off of those medications and live more of a normal life.
All right. And what is neuropathy exactly, Bill?
Well, it's an inflammation of nerves. So, Anthony, can I ask, the ulnar neuropathy, is it due to the same cause of the neuropathies in your legs, or is it due to using the cane?
The arm is due to the use of the cane, and the legs are due to falls. I have a seizure disorder.
Okay.
And I've fallen and injured both legs at separate times.
Okay. All right. And in terms of the pain relief and trying to get off the pain medication, is it more related to the elbow and forearm and hand, or is it related to the legs?
A combination of all of it.
Okay. All right. Well, in terms of the arm, the ulnar neuropathy, therapists might be able to help in terms of evaluating, one, why it happened. It may be that the cane is the wrong height for you. It may be you need something other than a cane to support your weight bearing, to take some pressure off that nerve. The nerve can get entrapped and can get scarred down, and that can cause a neuropathy type of pain, and there's a specific type of exercising to try to free that up or improve its extensibility. So there could be some local things that could be done related to the elbow, forearm, wrist and hand, as well as your legs, or something more general. In terms of pain relief, activity is important. Exercise is important. I don't know if you have access to a pool, but that can be a good place where you can exercise upper and lower body. But if you haven't seen a physical therapist since the ulnar neuropathy started, I guess that's what I would recommend. And then they can evaluate you from top to bottom and see what kind of program they can develop for you.
And for people who are trying to get off medication and trying to control their pain and have, limitations in so many limbs, the pool is a great place to exercise, because you don't need the cane to weight bear. You can do things with very limited weight bearing on your legs. And for many people, just being in the water relieves their pain. So even if you went and you had an hour of the day where your pain was less, mm-hmm. That can help just move you forward and get you off that plateau you're on now.
Well, that's great. That's great information. In fact, before I was injured, I was a swimmer all the way through high school, partway through college. So
okay.
I understand where that's coming from, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, great. Well, it might be good for body, mind, and spirit then for you, Anthony.
Yes.
Hope you can get in the water. Thanks for that call. Linda emailed in saying that she had a total hip replacement in August, so I guess coming up on a year ago, and asks if she will damage anything or cause pain or dislocation if she rows or does yoga.
Well, in August, so it's almost a year. Surgeons who do total hip replacements tend to fall into two categories: those who say that your restrictions are permanent, and those who say, after 3 to 6 months, if you haven't dislocated, you're pretty good. Just, use good caution. And so those restrictions are, you're not supposed to flex your hip past 90 degrees, you're not supposed to internally rotate, and you're not supposed to adduct across the plane of your body. What's most problematic is the combination of those three movements. Typically, any one of them alone isn't going to cause a dislocation unless you're very prone to that. So the first stop would be with her physician to ask about the precautions and whether they're still in place or how much precaution she needs to take with these activities. Rowing can be fine because you can modify how far you flex your hip, so you don't flex past 90 and you don't internally rotate or adduct with that. So that should be fine. Yoga depends upon the poses. You know, you can certainly stay out of poses that put you in those risky positions. So as long as she uses common sense and has an instructor who understands issues of hip replacement, she should be okay.
And is a sports medicine type person or program a good place to start to get information from?
It sure is. Yeah.
But she should start with the surgeon first. Right. And once she gets those precautions, then working with, you know, a PT can help set up a good program for her and as much of what to avoid and how to avoid that.
Great. And let's go to Irene in Kenosha. Hi, Irene.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, what?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I have golfer's elbow, which means, I guess, tendonitis that that's painful on the inside of the arm. Don't really know how I developed it, but I'm just wondering if there's a particular exercise or something that might relieve the pain.
Yeah, and there was another person who emailed with a question on tennis elbow and whether there was something to be done other than just compression or resting. And so, as you said, golfer's elbow is on the inside of the elbow, tennis elbow is on the outside of the elbow, and like the person earlier with Achilles tendinopathy, we encourage sort of the heavy eccentric loading. So for the golfer's elbow, that would be with your forearm supported on a surface with your palm up, you place a weight in your hand and lower it down, and then you use your other hand to bring it back up. For the person with tennis elbow, same position except you turn your palm down and you lower it down, palm down, and then again use your other hand to bring it back up. With a pretty heavy weight, you would probably start with, you know, somewhere in the 7 to 10 pound range, kind of a number that you could do 10 times. And probably for the first few repetitions, it's going to hurt. So, I would try that kind of a program, doing sets of 10 to 20 repetitions a couple times a day. It's going to hurt, but hopefully over the course of a few weeks, it'll hurt less and less, and you should increase the weight, as it becomes easier.
Okay. Great.
Good luck with that. And so you were saying, Lori, that tennis elbow and golfer's elbow are kind of
it's the opposite. It's a similar pathology, just on different
just
sides
different
of the
sides
elbow.
Of the, and that's because of the motions.
Because of the motions. And the mechanics.
And they don't always happen with golfers and tennis players. Right, exactly.
It's
more the location.
So you can't avoid them by just avoiding them.
Right.
We had a Facebook question from Sharon about carpal tunnel. Basically, you know, she's been working on a computer for a couple decades. She really tries to take frequent breaks and use ergonomic tools, but she is having carpal tunnel symptoms. She's wondering if it's worth looking into therapy and possibly surgery, or will the condition just reoccur if she's doing the same job?
Well, if has she tried night splints and things like that?
I don't see that she wakes up
multiple times. Yeah. Unless I wear my wrist braces. Yeah. Yes. So wrist braces are a way to control the symptoms. No, it shouldn't come back. If they do the carpal tunnel release, because basically they're going in and they're opening up that space and making more room for the nerve to pass through. And now that she has the ergonomics in place, hopefully it shouldn't come back. Obviously, nobody can guarantee that it's not going to come back, but opening that up certainly creates the possibility that it's not going to come back. She may have just been born with congenitally small tunnels, and then that combined with the repetitive activity, it just got ahead of it, and now she can't get on the other side of it. So the surgery can help her with that. And again, the surgeon should be able to give her more information on that.
And what kind of physical therapy is needed after a surgery like that, or does the surgery just kind of take care of the carpal tunnel syndrome?
Generally, the surgery takes care of the carpal tunnel, and the physical therapy work with maintaining motion and strength in the wrist and hands and dealing with the ergonomics.
Yeah, the nerves have to be able to glide Mm-hmm. It's not very much, but they have to be able to glide through that tunnel. And so the surgery gives it more space. So once the healing has occurred, there's some exercise to maintain the extensibility of the nerves gliding through that area. And then anything else that can be done ergonomically to minimize the stress of the tissues coming through that part mm-hmm. of the forearm.
And is carpal tunnel specifically related to doing work on computers, or is it any kind of repetitive motion with your wrists?
It's not just computers. Computers tend to get a lot of people in trouble, but people do lots of repetitive or sustained motions with hands and gripping.
Well, and the hands are poised in the same
yes,
position.
Yes, that's yeah. right. That's yeah. right.
It's just yeah. one of the most common work activities, you know, right. involving wrist and hand. Even people who work in the trades and construction tend to have more variability mm-hmm. in their wrist and hand motions. They have a lot of different things they do during the day, whereas computer people do the same things. They mouse and they computer.
Right.
I've actually noticed in checkout lines in grocery stores, them saying, please unload your basket to prevent repetitive motion mm-hmm. injuries of our cashiers. Because if you think about it, you know,
taking it up, scanning.
That's yeah. how I yeah. gave myself tennis elbow this winter, was hauling wood using the same grip motion
really?
Over and over again.
Wow. So yeah. you had wood chopper's elbow.
Exactly.
Well, Bill Boisnald and Lori Tynebrody are our physical therapists. They come by once a month. Actually, next month, it will be Lori and her sister, Jill Tynebaum, who will be here in Bill's place because Bill will be off. Thanks for listening. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.